Hello and welcome to Outbeat Collage, Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan, along with my co-host, Gary Carnevelli. Our engineer this evening is Mary Moore Campagna, and we are all coming to you live from the studios here in beautiful and hot Sonoma County. We have a full hour of talk and information for you. We're going to hear from Jeff Besham on the San Francisco 35th International LGBT Film Fest. Greg Moralia will bring you the latest LGBT news, and our guest list this evening features two delightful Sonoma County artists with very different styles, but one common heart, rooted in a passion for expression and individual technique. First, let's go to Greg and the news.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, June 19th, 2011. In New York, as momentum continued to build toward the passage of a marriage equality bill, Catholic Archbishop Timothy Dolan took to his website to compare the legislation to some sort of social control more identified with communist regimes like China and North Korea. He said, "The last time I consulted an atlas, it's clear we're living in New York, in the United States of America, not in China or North Korea. In those countries, government presumes daily to redefine rights, relationships, values, and natural law. Their communiques from the government can dictate the size of families, who lives, who dies, and the very definition of what family and marriage means." On Thursday, the New York State Assembly passed a same-sex marriage bill. And here in California, the battle over Prop 8 moved two steps forward. On Tuesday, Chief Judge James Ware of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California denied a motion by Prop 8 proponents asking that the court vacate Judge Vaughn Walker's ruling declaring Prop 8 unconstitutional on the grounds that the now-retired Judge Walker should have declined to hear the case because he was in a long-term relationship with another man, and that the judge's decision should be invalidated for that reason. Judge Ware also denied another motion by Prop 8 supporters that would have required the plaintiff's lawyers to return their copies of the video recordings of the trial. And here locally, two gay men launched the Northern California Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce at the Sonoma County Pride Festival. The chamber will be an inclusive place where gay-owned businesses and gay-friendly businesses can come together to build community. It will also be a resource to help customers and clients find these businesses. Craig Haskell, who works at the Sonoma County Tourism Board, and David Fackrell have already forged partnerships with both the California Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. The partnership will benefit members of all three groups. Base membership started at $195 a year. The chamber will offer many benefits, including networking, quarterly dinners, mixers, a weekly e-newsletter, a free listing in the online directory, and co-op marketing. The Chamber will soon organize educational seminars, which will provide members with a chance to learn from professionals about a range of topics to help them do business here in Northern California. Haskell said, "I received phone calls from many different gay business owners who said they would want to team up. We're trying to do something to rally our troops and to let people realize there are many LGBT businesses offering the same goods and services straight business owners are offering. I think many LGBT folks are seeking to do business and would prefer to work with, quote, family." Like any new venture, the Chamber's first goal is to let people know who they are and that they're up and running. They are reaching out to local businesses and businesses that want to tap into Northern California's LGBT community and already have a fair number of members. Fackrell said, "The idea came up when I was looking for an LGBT physician. With the technology of our current time, the way I located a doctor was through word of mouth and Facebook. While that was an okay way to find a physician, it's really a bit odd. There is no resource for LGBT citizens." The chamber is still in the process of establishing themselves as a nonprofit. They plan additional launches across Marin, Sonoma, and Napa counties. Details will be available to chamber and members through the chamber's website at www.norcalgcc.com. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, June 21st at 6:30 p.m., Transgender North Bay meets at the Positive Images office, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday, Food for Thought will host their new volunteer orientation at 7 p.m. at the Food Bank, 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville. On Thursday, June 23rd at 6:30 p.m., the men's peer-to-peer HIV gathers at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Thursday at 7 p.m., the Positive Images Youth Group gathers for their weekly meeting at Santa Rosa High School. On Friday, June 24th at 7:30 p.m., PFLAG Santa Rosa Support Group meeting happens at the Positive Images office, 312 Chin Street. And also on Friday at 8 p.m., So Not the Cleavers, two straight and two gay comics perform at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley. Proceeds go to the American Foundation for Equal Rights to repeal Prop 8. For more information, go to sonotthecleavers.com. And if you have an event you'd like to share with our listeners, please tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage.
Thanks, Greg, and welcome back, everyone. I just want to say hello and happy Father's Day to all of our LGBT dads out there. It's an important thing that you're in the lives of our young people, and we appreciate everything you're doing. Let's do a quick turn to Jeff Besham, who's going to give us some information on the San Francisco 35th Annual International Film Fest LGBT. Frameline, we're going to have a little technical difficulties here, but let me tell you a little bit more about that. Frameline is the world's largest resource for the LGBT media and film, and they are announcing this year the 35th anniversary of the internationally renowned San Francisco International LGBT Film Festival. This legendary showcase features the best of the best of 200 and some films covering more than 30 countries, and is now underway with screenings at three different theaters in San Francisco and also at the Rialto in Berkeley. Frameline 35 is featuring a number of special programs designed to engage audiences all around the festival's history and the unique role that has happened in shaping San Francisco's LGBT and arts communities. Are we ready?
This is Jeff Basham for Outbeat Radio. Celebrating its 35th anniversary as the world's oldest and largest LGBT film festival, Frameline 35 is a legendary event that draws together the LGBT independent film and media arts communities for 11 days of diverse, innovative, and socially relevant cinema. Offering a unique collage of groundbreaking documentaries, entertaining features, touching short films, and queer cinematic classics, Frameline 35 pays tribute to the diverse legacy of queer images and champions new visions for the future of LGBT filmmaking. Frameline 35 runs June 16th through 26th, 2011, with San Francisco screenings at the landmark Castro Theater, Rotzi Theater, and the Victoria Theater, and in Berkeley at Rialto Cinemas Elmwood. Meet up with fellow film lovers, rub shoulders with the hottest directors, and discover new film favorites, including international imports from South Africa, Belgium, Algeria, and Thailand, as well as local gems from around the bay. View the complete schedule and order tickets, www.frameline.org. Myself and Outbeat Radio hosts Gary Carnevale and Greg Moralia will be attending Frameline this year and look forward to bringing you exciting new film reviews and interviews with filmmakers, screenwriters, and actors in the coming months right here on Outbeat Radio, Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. Frameline is a very exciting time for a lot of movie buffs and non-movie buffs alike. It can also be a confusing time with three different theaters, multiple movies all day for 11 days, but if you're like me, you have an iPhone, and you guessed it, there's an app for that. The Frameline 35 iApp is available in the App Store and will help you find all the details about the Frameline films that you want to see. You can browse the program guide, view the festival schedule, bookmark your favorite films, watch trailers, play screenings directly on your iPhone calendar, and set reminders so you won't miss a single one. And last but not least, you can interact with your friends and invite them to come to Frameline with you. All of this and more is available in the Frameline 35 iApp presented by FilmFest. Frameline is always interested in your feedback regarding the festival. If you attend one of the shows, please remember to fill out the audience survey, and most importantly, vote for your favorite movies, shorts, and clips. New this year, the audience survey is online as the festival continues to become more green and reduce their carbon footprint. Voting is done via text message. The voting information is displayed at each and every screening. Submitting an audience survey enters you into a drawing for a benefactor-level membership for Frameline 36 in 2012. This is over a $700 value. Of special note this year are three films with a transgender theme. All ticketing and further information about these films are available at www.frameline.com. The first, Gun Hill Road. Gun Hill Road opened the festival this year, screening last Thursday at the Castro Theater. There is no doubt that Enrique Michael Rodriguez has many ideas of what his young son and namesake will become. Strong, proud of his New Yorkian heritage, macho, just like Enrique himself. But when Enrique returns home to the Bronx after 3 years in prison, he finds that he doesn't know his son Michael at all. Enrique tries to make up for lost time by focusing even more attention on his son, only to realize that Michael is transitioning and spends a lot of time as Vanessa. And Vanessa is struggling to balance school, her poetry, her family, and a boyfriend who prefers private time to public dates. Meanwhile, Vanessa's supportive mother, Angela, tries to keep her family together in spite of her own volatile personal life. The second, Becoming Chaz. Becoming Chaz streams this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Castro Theater. Growing up with famous parents, constantly in the public eye, would be hard for anyone. Now imagine that all those images people have seen of you are lies about how you actually felt. Chaz Bono grew up as Sonny and Cher's adorable golden-haired daughter and felt trapped in a female shell. Becoming Chaz is a bracingly intimate portrait of a person in transition and the relationships that must evolve with him. As Chaz undertakes gender reassignment, he invites us along on his journey of transformation. Along with his girlfriend Jenny, he travels from Los Angeles to San Francisco for surgery. It's clear that the transition is more than physical, especially for those around him. He decides to go public with his story, to put a face on a misunderstood issue. Family and friends offer frank insight in interviews about Chaz's past as Chastity and the present. Dealing with the press, Chaz decided to go on the offensive instead of letting reporters dig and assume. Cher tells it like it is, including her reticence about Chaz's plan to come out loud and proud. The third, Romeos. Romeos is from Germany, is performed in German with English subtitles, and screens this Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. at the Castro Theater. An introduction and Q&A will be ASL interpreted. A sweltering German summer is the perfect backdrop for Romeos, a rich story of coming into one's own. Lukas just turned 20, just showed up for his year of civil service, and just finished his 25th shot of testosterone, and is saving up for surgery. Life is looking good, but when he is mistakenly assigned to a women's dorm as he falls for a hot guy, it gets harder to keep his secret under wraps. Director Sabine Bernardi adds intensity to beautiful camera work with deeply saturated colors, and her deft pacing gives lingering looks and quiet moments time to fully develop. All of the information about these three films, as well as the rest of the festival schedule, and all ticketing information is available at www.frameline.org. For Gary Carnevelli and Greg Maraglia, I'm Jeff Basham. We look forward to sharing our experience of Frameline 35 with you in the coming months, right here on Outbeat Radio, KRCB-FM. Now we return to Outbeat Collage, Out in the Arts with Gary Carnevelli and Michaela Kennan.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Certainly something worth putting on the calendar. And Gary, I'm envious that you get to go. What a guy. I'm especially pleased to welcome Corrine Havernan to our Outbeat program tonight. Corrine is a web designer. She is also a painter with a penchant for expressionism. How's that for something that sounds official? She especially is inspired by just the whole personality of bare trees and does some wonderful little curly cues with those.
That would her be medium. Bare trees as in no leaves, not bare as in...
is in that grr.
Oh, wholesome or something.
There you go. She particularly likes to work with absorbent Japanese papers and most recently was a featured guest artist at our other guest this evening, Bill Shelley's Front Burner Studio, which is a phantom gallery located on the Windsor Town Green. Corrine, pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So I liked what you said in your bio about developing an aesthetic for love and art even in the land of avocado shag carpets.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Seattle and, you know, had a lot of avocado ugly carpet around and, you know, orange formica and that sort of thing. Nobody in my family really had an artistic bent, and so it just kind of welled up in me. I felt like I was born with a propensity to go into art, and so I just on my own started studying it, going to the library and taking out art books and started drawing on my own. But no, I hadn't grown up where it was encouraged to look at art, never went to museums or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And this was in just outside of Seattle?
Yeah, south of Seattle in Kent.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. A lot of green trees up there.
Yeah, the trees, they used to be my trees, but then when I moved to California, I quickly fell in love with trees around here, starting with the sycamores. And I lived in San Francisco, and the sycamores in Golden Gate Park as well as Civic Center. I worked in Civic Center, and I used to go out and draw them on my lunch breaks. And then I also got attracted to grapevines. I like the twisty, gnarly-ness mm-hmm. of them, like when they were bare, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think of my trees as being California trees.
Ah, there you go. Well, I'm fascinated by that because my mother, who passed away not too very long ago, did what I always called channeled trees. She worked with pen and ink and did the stippling.
Mm-hmm.
And just as she's sitting and doodling and watching TV, she could come up with these beautiful, gnarly, very detailed oaks, just like we have here, just dramatic images that, for her, were as easy as doodling. And so I don't think she really appreciated what she could do, but trees fascinated me, and she always wanted me to send pictures of those trees to her back in the Midwest. Then she could use those as guidelines. So trees
nice.
Have a lot of inspiration, I think.
Yeah, well, I used to do figurative work, and when I paint trees, I feel almost like they're a figure. You know, they have the movement,
right.
And they have the expression that I see in the human body. And I don't know why, but at some point I just stopped my obsession with figurative work and just totally went into trees. And I think that can satisfy me for the rest of my life, really.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you ended up at Washington State University in Pullman, and mm-hmm. as we talked a little bit earlier, home of cougar cheese.
Yeah, great cheese.
Which everyone needs to try, I think. But there you met a number of artists who inspired you and probably helped shape your own sense of who you were artistically.
Yeah, it was a crazy artistic energy in that area, all of the artists that... gathered in the art department around the school, some that taught, some that were graduate students. I look back on it now and I see that it really did have a seminal effect for me. Not that my art is so much like those artists, but that just the freeing aspect, there was a countrified sense, there was a almost a humorous bent to a lot of artists' work. I mentioned Galen Hansen as one of them. All of you out there have never heard of Galen Hansen, Google him. Galen Hansen. He's well known in the Pacific Northwest, but maybe not so much down here. And he's just a fabulous artist, very painterly. I was really attracted to his color work. And I was really glad that I picked Washington State University to study at. I picked it just to get as far away from home as possible without leaving the state. But I did find a lot of really inspirational artists there.
Jackson Pollock, too, was someone who was widely influential to you.
Yeah, well, I think everybody from my generation coming up as painters, and, you know, I'm about to turn 54, so that places me in an era. So, you know, we're talking early 80s. I'm in college. And, you know, at that point, the main modern art to study was abstract expressionism, and so I studied that quite a bit, and Jackson Pollock quickly just grabbed my imagination, the way he painted on the floor and his drip technique, and his art was really related to nature, but, you know, he took it so far that it wasn't representational. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't realize that he studied under Thomas Hart Benton. And you wouldn't think of that as a good person for Jackson Pollock to study on, but it really was, and it was somebody for him to react against and take painting to the next level. And I just thought he was the ultimate, and in some sense I still do today.
Did you literally lay papers on the floor and play around with lines?
You know, I didn't start doing that till I moved to San Francisco. And I, you know, I had a crazy little room. You shared a flat with people in San Francisco, and I luckily had a front room. I built the loft for my bed so I could have as much floor space as I wanted, and that's when I started throwing the paper on the floor, was in San Francisco. That would have been around 1982.
Wow. Is that what particularly brought you to the Bay Area? Was there some health issues that eventually kind of changed your world, and then you ended up in the Bay Area, right?
Well, the health issues that happened after I came to the Bay Area. I didn't know what to do after college so much. I was playing around with the idea of going to graduate school, and that didn't pan out, and then it was just important for me to get out of town, you know. I didn't want to spend too much time in Pullman. It was, you know, it was the end of the world. It was the wheat fields, and I was just coming to terms with being gay. And I told everybody I was going to San Francisco because of the arts, but, you know, it really was because I was coming out and being gay, I think, if you get down to it. But shortly before I moved here, there was the German Expressionism show at the Museum of Modern Art. And I found a way. I hopped on a bus, and I came to San Francisco, and I stayed in a flop hotel just to go see that show. And it was extremely inspirational, because neo-expressionism, you know, the very painterly movement was going on at the time, and to be a painter was really exciting, and to study the German Expressionism was especially exciting, and then being in San Francisco. So
sure.
That brought me here, and it was sort of like spreading my seeds and knowing that I was probably going to come here, but not knowing if I had the courage at the moment.
Yeah, I understand that, too, because at one time in my life, California was a big, scary place.
Right. So yeah, I didn't know hardly anybody here at all. So
yeah. So tell me about that, if you can, that juxtaposition of discovering yourself as an artist and coming out as a lesbian, and did they play off one another, or could you be a lesbian because you were an artist, or vice versa?
Well, I think discovering myself as an artist first, I think the baby dyke within me was probably whispering, you know, you're not going to lead a conventional life. Coming to terms with my sexuality, I was maybe a little behind the curve than most people. It didn't happen until right after I was coming out of college. And I think just having the courage to live life as an artist and live life as a lesbian sort of hit me right at the same moment. And it was that moment of coming out, like, literally within a few months of leaving Pullman, moving to San Francisco, and wanting to live my life as an artist as much as I could. I think both of those took a lot of courage, and they just kind of went hand in hand together at the same moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So at that point, then, how did your art start to change, or did it change? What you did, how you did it, what you were interested in?
How did it change? That's a good question. I don't know that it was affected so much about moving to San Francisco per se, other than I started to paint my surroundings in the trees. And I worked in the Civic Center area. It was actually the Tenderloin, really. And every lunch break, the Museum of Modern Art was over in Civic Center at that point. It was before they moved down to 3rd Street, which happened years later. And I used to spend my lunch breaks running to the museum, looking at the going. Sometimes I wouldn't go into the museum. I'd just go into the bookstore, and I would spend all of my lunch breaks. And I could really stretch my lunch breaks at those times, mm-hmm. Just discovering as much art as I could. And I think everything I looked at, I was just absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really good to be in a town. San Francisco was pretty good for looking at artists, and I would go to the galleries every week and just absorbing. It was mm-hmm. a good place to absorb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great segue into my next question, which is actually how did you start to work with absorbent papers and ink techniques?
Well, it was Jackson Pollock. I found a book, you know, hounding the bookstores as always. I think I found it at the Museum of Modern Art bookstore. I found this book of Jackson Pollock's works on paper, and it just kind of threw me for a loop, you know, because you know, I'd seen all of his other work before, but I hadn't seen this like ink on paper, and there was something about that that really attracted me, and that's when I started throwing the paper on the floor. And it started with small sheets, and pretty soon I found these rolls of paper tablecloth.
Oh,
so
boy.
I could just roll out, you know, paper for days.
Sure.
And I was flinging ink, much in the style of Pollock, and I could fling and have enough room to do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you fling with a purpose in mind, or do you fling and kind of build off of what happens?
No, I was coming more from representational. At times, my work would get almost abstract just because I was flinging, let's
uh-huh.
say. But I was always coming from representational, so I usually had a purpose in mind, yes.
Right, right. That's interesting. So it's rice paper, is that right, that you use now?
Yeah, yeah. The paper tablecloth is not real high quality. When I worked with that, I would end up gluing it down onto canvas with matte medium, and I was hoping that the matte medium would then preserve the paper and that it wouldn't go really bad. And actually, I have some of those pieces from the 80s is when I started doing this, and they've held up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how do you preserve them? Or just...
Well, they're rolled up in my garage right now because all those paintings back then, I worked on the floor and I always made sure I had, it was always my living space, but I had a big space on the floor, and some of those paintings are 10 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't have room for them in my house. In fact, I've got my very best one from that period when I used to paint large in my office at the school,
uh-huh.
and there's no place for it in my house right now, so it's wonderful I can see it in my office.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Do you remember what you felt like at the time that you were creating that particular piece? Can you revisit that and kind of feel those same things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really freeing because, you know, I mean, these pieces, they're almost as big as me and sometimes bigger than me. And
mm-hmm.
You're just, you know, I'm working on the floor and I'm stepping through them, in them and out them. And it's like a dance
mm-hmm.
when you paint that big.
And trees. And then so this fascination with trees...
There's a rhythm there.
Uh-huh.
It's what I admire in Pollock. You know, a lot of people said, well, a monkey could do that. And maybe a monkey could simulate what he was doing, but would they capture the rhythm? And that's what just totally amazes me. I mean, it's nothing like standing in front of a real large Pollock and taking in the miracle
mm-hmm.
of the rhythm of those pieces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's excellent. So you just finished up an exhibition with Front Burner Studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you showing anywhere else or any new directions?
Not right now. It's always with me. It's a balance, a dance between, you know, making money and doing the art. And since my show at Bill's studio, it's been more about making money. But I'm about to go into a period where, let's just say, I won't be as employed as much as I was, and I'm really looking forward to putting much more energy back into my art.
Uh-huh, more yeah. time for art. Good, good. Well, we certainly look forward to seeing more, and hopefully you can get more up our Windsor way, too, because there's good things happening there. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's exciting what's happening in Windsor.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that. Mary, let's take a break.
We just want to remind you that you are listening to KRCB-FM in Santa Rosa. This is Outbeat Collage. KRCB also reminds you that the 6th Street Playhouse is presenting Charles Ludlam's campy, hilarious comedy, The Mystery of Irma Vep, which will be running through June 26th. That would be next Sunday. All evening performances are at 8 o'clock p.m., and Saturday and Sunday matinees are at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Playhouse, located at 52 West 6th Street in Santa Rosa. This is a two-act, quick-change, cross-dressing marathon in which two actors play all the roles while making more than 30 costume changes. It features live musical underscoring. For tickets or more information, call 707-523-4185 or click on www.6thstreetplayhouse.com. It's 8:31, and now we continue with Outbeat Collage.
We're going to hear a little music from Jed Havens, who performed at Sonoma County Pride. Here he is from his self-titled 2010 CD.
Which one? No.
Name of the song is Parachute.
That's the same one I had.
Okay, well, little technical difficulties here in the studio. I think we'll just go right back to Outbeat Collage and our interviews. We just finished up a conversation with local artist Corrine Habernan, and she's one I had the pleasure of meeting through our next guest, actually, Bill Shelley. Bill Shelley is a landscape and figurative artist here in Sonoma County. His formal education in art actually began at the University of Sioux Falls in South Dakota. He also has an impressive resume of continuing studies with a number of very notable artists and teachers, most currently Sandra Spidell, who is well-known and lives right here in our own Sonoma County. In April of this year, he opened Front Burner Studio in Windsor, thus becoming one of the original first five Phantom Galleries located just off of the town green. Bill is actually one of the most courageous and adventurous artists I know. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Michaela. It's great to be here.
So your style is somewhat elusive of description, at least from my standpoint, you know, when I look at it. Suffice it to say, you use a lot of textures and somewhat simplified shapes, play a lot with light values in your work. How would you describe what you do?
An experiment.
Always.
I'm always experimenting. I consider myself a shape person. When I look I'm looking at through the window behind you, and I see those beautiful hills. I'm seeing shapes first, and then I start seeing color and value.
Yeah.
I'm a shape person. So that's when I'm working with the real world. That's where I go first, and that's kind of my anchor point, and then build on that.
I've often wondered that, and one of the advantages of being in the gallery situation is that you see so many people who see the world in so many ways, and it is, of course, displayed in their art. It comes out in the kinds of art and their art forms. When I think of Corrine and the kinds of trees you do, your tall, straight spines with the curly, flowing branches, and then I look at Bill, and you know, yours are much more abstract and suggestive of the image as opposed to very fine details of what the actual object or theme is. So I find that one of the most fascinating aspects of art. When did you first become aware of your kind of artistic leanings?
Oh, probably when I was, you know, in third grade and getting compliments on drawings of Mickey Mouse at that age. And then just went with it from there in junior high and high school, and then ended up studying painting in college. So, that's where it started.
Uh-huh. Did you grow up thinking, I want to be an artist, or?
No, I just knew I was interested in it, and I felt it gave something back to me when I was involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I had a vocation in mind. I just was interested in doing it and trying it out and experimenting with it.
Uh-huh. Well, and I can address this to both of you, actually. Were your families supportive of kind of the side? It's one thing to say, oh, my kid draws cute pictures and I can put it on the fridge. But were they supportive to the point that they said, you have a talent and you really need to pursue this?
Well, my family, like I said, didn't really have an artistic bent, but they recognized that I did and they encouraged it. I was never discouraged to study art, as some families might, worrying about how you're going to make a living. So they were always encouraging that way. It's just that it wasn't something I really shared with mm-hmm. my other family members.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
My family's just, you know, music nuts. So that was seen as something very important and valid to be involved with. It was. I felt a lot of support, although I was never encouraged to go to art school. But the art thing was kind of the main topic of conversation whenever we got together. So it was just understood that that was important. Mm-hmm. In terms of music, it was just understood that music meant a lot more to us than just a way of being entertained. So that for me is translated over into the painting world as well. Mm-hmm. That there are paintings that are designed to entertain people, and that's fine and that's great. But that's a certain audience, and then there's another audience for people who want other kinds of things from painting mm-hmm. and from other art forms. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I find really, really interesting about art, is those different levels and hierarchies mm-hmm. that go along with it.
Mm-hmm. So, Corrine, I know that you haven't done much with figurative work, but Bill does figurative work too. And I'm rather curious about kind of, again, the dance and the flow of what you find in the human form versus...
Well, figurative work is kind of what set me free, really. When I was in college, you have to realize when I first started painting, my favorite artist was Andrew Wyeth. And I painted really tight, dry watercolor type paintings, very realistic. And when I went to college, it's like I opened up when I went to figure drawing class, because you're forced to draw really quickly. You have 30-second studies that you do in the beginning, and it forces you to loosen up. So for me, that was a key to set me free, mm-hmm. was figurative work, and I focused on that while I was in college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My feeling about figurative work and how it has been a gateway for me to go through is almost parallel to that, because I was also doing... kind of stuck in this mode where I was doing photorealistic work with a triple-aught brush, and just, it was almost like needlepoint, and it was fail-safe. You couldn't really make a mistake because it just crawled along. And, of course, you would get tons of praise for it, so that was seductive, too. And then I started taking figure drawing from Alan Asdarian at the JC, and all of a sudden we were standing for 3 hours. We were working large. And it really had to involve your whole mind and body rather than just sitting and, mm-hmm. and limiting the activity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very freeing to me. And now still I cannot work sitting down. I have to be standing now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the figure drawing is, it's been great for me.
So, and I've seen some of your figurative work, Bill, not so much yours, Corrine, but I know that Bill's work employs some of, again, those same sort of shapes and shadows mm-hmm. and light values.
For me, it's always been about the line. So even when I was doing figurative work, I start with a line.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love bare trees. Is I'm all about the line. That's my strong thing, whereas Bill is with shapes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's fascinating. Did you work with male models, females, or did it matter?
Well, in class you have both, and it didn't matter in the sense I got something out of both, but when I was alone painting myself, it was always a female model.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bill, you mentioned something to me actually the other day. You were reflecting on having attended a local art show that, mm-hmm. that both of us were familiar with, and mentioned that you found very few of those pieces fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck with me. It's like, tell me about what you consider fresh art.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I feel kind of, you know, I feel kind of mean making a comment like that because you want to support community arts and what's happening there. But at the same time, you want people to push themselves and grow. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can just sense that people, they're stuck in one place, maybe because they keep getting the same kind of accolades for staying in that place rather than growing and learning. So, and the fresh quality I was talking about does have to do with taking chances, mm-hmm. with learning and putting yourself in a corner or taking yourself out of a corner, mm-hmm. so you can grow. So it does involve, a sense of vulnerability, a sense of urgency and energy. Yeah, I guess that's about it. But, mm-hmm. I think fresh is a good quality, mm-hmm. in artwork. Mm-hmm.
I laughed because when you made that comment, you mentioned barns. You'd never seen so many barns in your life. And I drew barns. I painted barns. When I was in high school, that was my thing, you know, that dry brush tight, just exactly like Bill was describing. And so that's a very conventional way to approach art. And artists who pushed on beyond that, they frequently find something within themselves that's much more original. And I think that's probably what Bill was reacting to. He saw that people hadn't really pushed very far. They just mm-hmm. stuck on the very first level that they got to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was at a workshop in a couple of years ago, and there was a woman who was, she really was a cat lady. She really wanted to paint cats, and the teachers were saying, you know, are you sure about that? Because this subject matter can be very cloying and dangerous because it can be so cliche. Mm-hmm. But she was dedicated to it. So by the end, it's a 2-week workshop, and by the end of it, she was stretching these cats out in all kinds of the wonderful forms they can make their bodies into. And then inside the cat, she had the little cat embryos doing the same kind of weird shapes and stretches. So she had taken a very cliche topic and really made it hers. Mm-hmm. Even barns, even lighthouses, even cats can be subject matter, but it's kind of dicey territory, although it's kind of a fun challenge, mm-hmm. to do that.
Mm-hmm. And when you very first opened up the studio, you were inspired, I forget the artist's name, but she was doing a painting a day.
Oh, Carol Marine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so you kind of aspired to that same sort of process and speed of creation.
Yeah.
How are you doing with that?
Well, I'm not doing a painting a day anymore, but I think it's a good exercise. I mean, you could even do a painting an hour is a great exercise because you just have to give it up and let go and you only have time for the essentials, which mm-hmm. are the building blocks of the painting. Mm-hmm. Once you get those essentials down, you can hang ornamentation onto it, and it should still work. Mm-hmm. Then you're in the position of being able to steer the painting where you want it to go instead of it steering you. I enjoyed doing that, and now it's a little bit more, calculated, mm-hmm. what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept that kind of has taken off right now with the internet. It's a way to blog in a way that artists are blogging visually. And I've known a number of artists actually who are doing that, doing the painting a day. And it actually creates interest in your work because the viewers, mm-hmm. the people who follow you want to come back and say, oh, well, what is Bill up to today? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is a good concept. I think artists are finding much more ways to get their artwork out in the world and also respond to the changing world. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a blogging for artists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand too that vlogging now, you know, actually mm-hmm. taking videos of yourself in the studio and recording your process and then posting it to YouTube or someplace mm-hmm. like that is another popular medium because people are actually seeing the art being created. And they're using the technology then, of course, to reach a wide audience, and that's where you get your followers. How important is social media now to the artist today?
Well, I think it's a wonderful tool. And it used to be that the gallery was the only gate to go through, and now there's a lot of different creative things you can do in terms of, in addition to gallery placement of work, mm-hmm. with social media and web use, and also things like Phantom Galleries.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of different options, and there's so many options. I feel like the trick is trying to find the correct match between how you're trying to find your audience and what you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you personally handle sometimes the not so flattering reactions to what you do? Maybe someone says, oh, a monkey could do that, or gosh, just looks like putting paint on paper.
Well, first you have to evaluate the comment, whether they're really getting what you do. You know, I've had friends tell me just right out, I don't understand what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You know, they don't have to. And so I only take in the comments if I feel like the person really understands what I'm trying to do. And then I evaluate whether there's, you know, good feedback in that or not.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of people, I'm always interested in hearing what people say, and then you know when it's ringing true or not. A lot of people are just out there, and they feel like outsiders when mm-hmm. it comes to contemporary art. They don't know how to get into it, how to approach it, and I always felt in the music world, it's certainly that way for a lot of people listening to 20th century music, and they just think, oh, that's just too modern for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they find a way to get into it. Then they're inside of it, and then they can actually hear the structure and get it and enjoy it and not be intimidated by it.
Mm-hmm. What's the perfect place in your heart and in your location for you to create? Can you just go into a corner in your room? Do you go to the beach? Do you need music? Is it silence? How do you create what you create?
Well, I think both Bill and I have very immediate styles, and so it's important to sink right in and totally concentrate. I really admire Bill because he does a lot of plein air work, and I used to do a bit of that drawing out like I described when I lived in San Francisco, and you'd have the bums come up and comment. But I have a hard time blocking everything out, so I tend to work by my little old self in my studio, and music is really important. For some reason, world music, I put on world music, and that the rhythms and stuff inspire me, and maybe it's because I don't understand what they're singing, and mm-hmm. I'm totally concentrated mm-hmm. on my work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoy working out on site initially. I mean, for years I was working exclusively on site and just having to start, develop, and finish a painting in one session on site. And it gets kind of panicky because you want to wrap it up and get it done. And now I usually start and build a foundation for a painting on site, then bring it back home and work on it. And I think that's a good thing for me because it gives me some distance from the start, and because physically I put it away in the car, drive home, and then bring it out again. And just doing that gives me a fresh view on mm-hmm. what's going on. And then, so one part, the on-site part is very immediate and responsive to the landscape or the figure. And then the at-home part is a little bit more analytical about, okay, how does this painting work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I turn it upside down, how does the composition work? And without trying to overthink it,
mm-hmm.
but to start thinking it a little bit more.
Right, right.
Bill, how did you find working in, you opened up your studio and you had it as a working studio, mm-hmm. so you were actually painting and having the gallery open at the same mm-hmm. time. Did you find that worked well for you, is to paint in that environment?
Yeah, it worked fine. I mean, I wish more people... when people come through the door, I want to make sure that they feel welcomed, and so I greet them and kind of give them a mini orientation on the studio gallery. And so they do that, and then they leave, and they haven't really, you know, I haven't been really just working and them looking. So I actually would like to do that more. And when I was working out on site, it was fun. People would come by and make comments. Kids would always look at you and say, "Are you an artist?" Which always cracks me up, but so yeah, it doesn't. I kind of got over that. The most painful thing of working in front of people is when you're out and about and someone, they obviously do not like your work, and they're trying to come up with some compliment, and it's just kind of, that is painful to listen to. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have just a plain, you know, it's not my cup of tea, but have a good day, yeah, rather than trying to search for a compliment somewhere. I mean, they're trying to be nice, so that's fine.
Yeah, but it almost hurts a little bit worse, you know, yes, when they're fluttering around and trying to find the proper words. So, excellent. Where do both of you want to go with your art next? Do you have new directions, or you just want to do more art, Corinne?
Yeah, I need to spend more time on it, that's for sure, and I'm not getting any younger. You know, I used to paint really large, and then illness issues came into effect, and then my studio now is just a bedroom in my house, so I'm kind of limited in size, and my body doesn't want me to paint large on the floor anymore. But I have this garage, and I'm liking the idea of throwing some big pieces of paper down on the floor again, and I opening myself up to doing the forest instead of a tree. You know,
excellent.
I would like to do that. And I the other thing I didn't mention, my other main influence is Chinese painting, and I look at some of those very large pieces that they've done, and I just see so many different directions. Sort of not wildly different directions, like Bill has kind of gone. He's such an explorer. He'll set off in different directions. For me, I'm kind of more stuck in the same, I shouldn't say stuck, but stay in the same realm. But I would like to open it up and get bigger again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bill?
Well, that I just feel like the work is leading me. And although it's somewhat of a conversation, but yeah, I feel like I need to just keep working and keep trying to distill down. I mean, I think a lot of it is taking away, so that what remains is that all that remains is what's really important, or what you want the piece to be about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. So far as where I want the art to go, the finding the audience part of it is the challenge for me, and I have a lot to learn about how to connect with the people out there who would connect with my work.
Right, right.
But so far as the art itself goes, I almost feel like I'm running downhill, and I can't. If I stop, I'll fall.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just have to keep running.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun.
Uh-huh. That's the muse.
Yeah.
And the muse is going full force.
Well, Bill, you know, he retired not too long ago. How long has it been?
It's been a year and a half.
And it's very fun to watch him, because he can put full time into his art now, and he is running. It is amazing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Good. So, Bill, we can see your work at your website, which is?
www.bshelley.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a link on the website to the Front Burner blog and to my own blog.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's it.
And, of course, at Front Burner Studio in Windsor.
Yes.
Give us the address.
9086 Windsor Road, one block west of the town green.
Correct.
Across the street from the Windsor
Arts Council
space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Corinne?
Well, I'm a web designer, and I haven't spent very much time putting my art on the web, but I believe I'm at www.haveart.net.
Right. And isn't that have with a...
H-A-V-E, as in have is the first part of my name, and then art, and having art. So,
yeah, haveart.net. Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm thrilled to personally have both of you in the studio tonight, and I'll look forward to watching your progress and having you back on the radio sometime down the road, and we see where you've gone and where you've been and where we all end up together, okay?
Well, thank you
Thanks
very
a
much.
Whole
Thanks,
lot
Michaela.
For being with us in
thank
the studio.
You.
All right.
Thanks, Michaela. Next week on Outbeat Now, hosts Jeff Basham and Greg Moralia will bring you up to date on current issues and events impacting the LGBT youth and community. Next time on Outbeat Collage, July 17th, here on KRCB at 8 p.m., we'll chat with theater director Buzz Bentz and talk about his direction of the Pegasus Theater's current production, Avow. Also, Jason Pardue, from the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival will be here to talk about the organization's Best in the Fest screening of Out in Silence, which happens July 22nd. And we'll have an updated arts and entertainment calendar to add to your summer fun. Once again, thank you to Corrine and Bill and Michaela and Mary Moore Capagna for engineering, to our KRCB listeners for listening in, and to all our dads, happy Father's Day. We appreciate everything that you do. Listen to Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. This is Gary Carnevale for Michaela Kennan. Good night.
And do you want to talk about the music?
Oh, up next we'll hear from Jeb Havens, finally, and this is Parachute from his self-titled album.
Love is like a parachute, you don't know till you let it loose, if you are doomed to die or if you're flying. But don't it feel the same up front before you pulled the cord and wondered just what made this crazy leap worth trying? So grab my hand and dance so we can't even stand. Ditch the stress of the rest of our bestly plans. All the fear that I hear when I steer from my hands. This race is over before it had a chance. And love is like a parachute, you don't know till you let it loose, if you are doomed to die or if you're flying. Don't it feel the same up front before you fold the cord and wondered just what made this crazy leap worth trying? But I shut down and drown in insecurity, won't control even though I know what will be, once was blind but find this time I can see. With an open heart I'll catch you, with an open heart you'll catch me. At the end of the day all I need, a smile on your face and I see, no matter the pace of these streets, you melted away and I breathe easy. Love is like a parachute, you don't know till you let it loose, if you are doomed to die or if you're flying. But don't it feel the same up front before you fall apart and wonder just what made this crazy leap worth trying? It's a crazy leap worth trying. Oh, it's a crazy leap worth trying. Try it.